signs of a big shift on the way at the Fed and maybe at Netflix. I don't think those have anything to do with one another, but you never know. From APM, it's the Marketplace Midday Update for November 14th. I'm Jeff Horwich. We will break down these developments this morning from Wall Street and Washington. Plus, coming out of the closet in the financial world, more protests in Europe. I know that's hard to believe, but it's true. They're protesting in Europe, believe it or not. And whether Kansas City can raise the money for a new streetcar line by asking for donations.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
The number two official at the U.S. Federal Reserve, Vice Chair Janet Yellen, has thrown her weight behind a major change in Fed policy. The issue is how long the central bank keeps its foot on the gas, stimulating the economy, and when it decides that enough is enough. Right now, the Fed promises to keep interest rates low for a certain amount of time. But the alternative, which Janet Yellen now backs, is that the Fed ties its actions to certain outcomes, like bringing down unemployment to 7%. Julia Coronado is chief economist at BNP Paribas, and she's here to help explain a little bit. Hi, Julia.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. What would be the implications for the economy if the Fed were to take this kind of approach?
Well, basically, the Fed is trying to commit itself to success in its policies, and it wants to communicate that as clearly as possible to the public. So they think that by tying their policies explicitly to goals on employment and inflation, the public will believe in their commitment and act accordingly.
So this is not at all a settled matter. Who thinks this is a terrible idea and why?
There are a handful of people on the committee that have had troubles with the unconventional policies all along. They think they're too aggressive. They are indeed untested, and there are a number of people that are very uncomfortable with that. So anything that further, if you will, institutionalizes these policies is something they're not comfortable with.
With Janet Yellen making her views clear now, how likely do you think this shift is to happen?
I think it's very likely to happen. It's not clear when. So this is a consensus-driven body, and they do want most people on board with the change. But with advocacy from the vice chair, who is also potentially the heir apparent to become Fed chair, we think these policies will come to fruition eventually.
Julia Coronado is chief economist with BNP Paribas. Thanks. Good to talk with you.
It's a pleasure.
And let's do the numbers. We're seeing the same pattern this morning so far that we have seen every day this week, I believe, which is a strong open and then falling into the red. At this hour, the Dow is down about 0.7%. The S&P 500 and the NASDAQ also down. We'll see what the rest of the day brings. U.S. retail sales fell in October, and two factors seem to be at play here. People stopped buying cars as much as they had been, and September's surge in sales of the iPhone 5 left October retail numbers looking a little bit weak by comparison. And prices across the U.S., as measured by the Producer Price Index, also fell in October. That doesn't happen all that often. Particularly, the prices of energy and cars were down. Shares of Netflix, let me take a look over here, are up almost 1% at this moment. Investor Carl Icahn now owns about 10% of the company. And the latest word this morning is that he's pushing to put it up for sale. But Icahn might have a bit of a battle on his hands with Netflix founder and CEO Reed Hastings. James McQuivey is a tech and media analyst with Forrester Research. Good to talk with you, James.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So Netflix, they have massive name recognition. I don't know if I know anybody who doesn't use it. What's their problem right now?
You know, Netflix has reached kind of the end of the road, and certainly that's what Carl Icahn thinks, because they've reached all the people who are easy candidates to be customers. They've reached the top amount that they can charge those customers for the videos that they deliver, and that creates a problem, because now the question is, how do you grow? And that's a question that some people think there's no answer to, and they would rather start to sell off pieces of Netflix while it's still worth something.
And for people who think of Netflix as the DVD by mail service, those days are fading fast, right?
Yeah, it's pretty much history at this point. What Netflix is really in the business of is its online streaming business, and it's a great business. They created that market at a time when everyone else was saying that's never going to happen, and of course it's happened, and they have more than 20 million consumers around the world who subscribe to them for exactly those services.
So here comes Carl Icahn, buys up 10% of the company and wants to start having a say. What does he think they ought to do?
I don't know for sure that Carl's thinking this, but if I were in his position, I would be thinking the company's worth something right now. It's only going to start to diminish in value as its prospects for growth slow down from here on out. And so it's time to sell it. Find a buyer, somebody who would want to take that asset and make it grow into something else.
So Netflix gets swallowed up in that scenario. Which scenario do you think is best for consumers?
Well, you know, frankly, streaming online is now something that a majority of people do. But the problem with that business is you can't really do much more than that. But if you're Amazon, you could use Netflix as a way to basically make people buy more Amazon products. If you're Apple, you could use Netflix as a way to get people to use iTunes more often and then eventually continue to buy these expensive, elegant devices that Apple makes. But Netflix doesn't have any strategy like that. And that's why people like Icon are interested in selling it, so that you get some cash out of it before suddenly Amazon says, you know what, we're not interested in buying it. We've got our own thing. Or Apple says the same thing. And at that point, Netflix wouldn't be worth anything, and that would be a challenge.
Sounds a little like you just wrote Netflix's obituary, but so be it. James McQuivey, tech media analyst with Forrester Research. Thanks, as always.
Yeah, thank you.
This week, leaders from some of the world's largest firms gathered in London to talk about coming out in the financial services industry. The summit was called Out on the Street, and Marketplace's Shireen Marisol Meraji has our story.
Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, HSBC, we all know they're global financial heavyweights. But we rarely hear about them in the context of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender issues. Ashley Steele is the vice chair of KPMG, a company that provides global audit and tax services. She told the BBC that when she was starting out, there was more of what she called homophobic conversation in the halls.
Times have changed. You know, I don't really see any reason now why anyone should hide their sexuality.
Peter Murray helped organize an LGBT support network last year at the global business firm Arup.
The advice I was given when I joined this firm was just be careful about who you tell. And that was bad advice.
Murray says fewer than 1% of those working at FTSE 100 companies are openly gay.
I think we've got to be careful that we don't take the London experience and say things are all right now, because out in the regions, it may be a different story.
Even some Wall Street employees report difficulties coming out at work. Murray says when you're out, you're comfortable. You're a better employee and your company benefits. I'm Shireen Marisol Meraji for Marketplace.
And just a quick sidebar here. If you think gas prices are high where you live, how about $6.44 a gallon? The Orlando Sentinel this week documented that price at a Shell station near Lake Buena Vista. It's a touristy area right near Disney World. Now, that's a price that locals consider obscene, even compared to the usually jacked up prices around that area. At least it's better, though, than it used to be before the county passed a law this year that requires stations to at least advertise their prices.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
Millions of workers have been out on strike across Europe today to protest public spending cuts. There are demonstrations and rallies in at least six countries, including Spain and Greece, as part of what's been labeled a European Day of Action and Solidarity. From our European desk in London, Stephen Beard reports.
Hundreds of flights have been cancelled, car factories and ports have been shut, and rail services disrupted. Labour unions orchestrated the cross-border action. They're protesting against the German government's insistence that Eurozone countries in need of a bailout must cut their public spending. The unions say this just tips the most troubled economies even deeper into recession. Gail Allard of the IE Business School in Madrid says many Spaniards feel they're paying too high a price to combat the crisis.
Unemployment's at 25%. People have run down their savings. Some are losing their homes. People are living off, you know, the pensions of their grandparents. Or, you know, it's getting quite desperate.
The largest labor union in Germany is also protesting today in an act of solidarity with workers in Spain and Greece. The head of the union said these countries are being cut to death. At the European desk in London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Kansas City, Missouri recently got a federal grant for a new streetcar line, but the grant comes up a little short, so the city is passing the hat. Kansas City hopes asking residents and businesses to donate money can help supplement the other old standby tax hikes. Here's reporter Russell Newlove.
Here's a novel idea. Instead of cities demanding more tax to fund projects, they ask the public to donate whatever they want in return for rewards or perks. That's the theory behind Neighbourly, a new civic crowdfunding startup in Kansas City, Missouri.
It helps these communities pull together money from individual contributors, businesses, and foundations and institutions.
That's Jace Wilson, founder of Neighbourly. His idea is simple. Organisations propose a project that benefits the community. Neighbourly then builds a system online allowing the public to donate directly to that project. The bigger the donation, the bigger the perk. Right now, he's working on getting local businesses involved in raising $75 million for the new streetcar system.
If they're located near the line, then they could pre-buy rides for all of their workforce. And when you talk about, you know, a company that has 1,000 people and they can pre-buy rides for, say, 5 years, they can write that off in five different ways off of their taxes and get golden PR while doing a world of good.
But it's not just about amassing cash. It's about investing in communities and raising awareness of how individuals, organizations, and businesses can work together to improve their areas. Kansas City Mayor Sly James is on board.
Neighbourly has done a number of things that have found ways to engage people in the fabric of the community and make actual contributions in order to achieve very specific social or community purposes. It's a brilliant idea.
Its brilliance lies in the visibility of the project. Instead of just paying into a vague tax pot, contributors invest in a tangible product.
It allows people to pick and choose those things that are important to them and make direct investments to it.
And while it might not replace the traditional revenue-raising model of simple taxation, Neighbourly is, at least, giving people the option to help finance their cities their way and to truly say, we built that. In Kansas City, I'm Russell Newlove for Marketplace.
And winding down here, you might have encountered this scene on TV or somewhere else. U.S. service members or aid workers give a new soccer ball to some kid in Afghanistan or Sudan or somewhere, and they all bond by kicking it around for a little while. Well, more often than not, apparently, those balls tear or they deflate not long after the gift. California entrepreneur Tim Jonigan saw some video of kids in Darfur playing with wads of garbage tied up with string, and so he set out to create a nearly indestructible soccer ball for those folks. Now, according to the Sydney Morning Herald, he has done it with a little financial backing from Sting, something like $300,000, as I recall. The One World Football, as it's called, is made from something called pop foam that is apparently pretty indestructible. UNICEF and General Motors have already placed orders for millions of these things to give away in the third world. One sort of interesting challenge, though, because they can't be deflated, they do take a little bit more space when you're shipping them overseas. That's all for the Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.